Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah. Okay.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. Welcome to the Celtic Down Under Weekend Review Podcast. My name is Anthony Maguire. I'm joined this week by Paul Massey as we dissect Rangers 3, Celtic 3. Paul, before we get into it, how are you? How was your weekend leading up to last night?
Well, the weekend was very tame until yesterday. As we both know, we joined each other with another mate at the Supporters Club and the Perth CSC, which was packed, a few hundred as usual, really good atmosphere, but probably overdid it a tad by starting 4 hours before kickoff. So I do find that de-stresses me quite a bit.
Was that you de-stressed, was it?
That was me de-stressed, yeah. Jesus, I would, yeah, that was with the... The edge is taken off. God knows what I'd have been like without. But yeah, the weekend had been tame up until that point, knowing that obviously the big one was yesterday. So yeah, it was a calm before the storm, shall we say, in terms of how the weekend panned out. And unsurprisingly, work was less than enjoyable today, but them's the breaks.
I sounded rather hoarse, and I think I'm probably still sounding a little bit hoarse because I standing less than a meter away from you shouting for the better part of 3.5 hours. Yeah, I kind of woke up this morning and wife's like, are you getting sick? And it's like, no, it was just aftermath of the Celtic Supporters Club at Perth CFC, which was, I said, good, great night, Johnny Fox's, result aside, but yeah, the atmosphere was there and it was good to get amongst it.
I was just going to say, my very first colleague that I spoke to this morning said, are you a bit sick? You don't look or sound that well. I went, no, I just hung over. probably a bit more open than I should have been, but there you go.
Well, I was honest as well. I've had that dinner much to drink, but yeah, just very, very, sounded very, very rough this morning. I was sat and watched the Grand Prix beforehand, and that was a very boring, tame affair. So that was kind of put me to sleep. So it was the thankfully the music and the vibe got me into the atmosphere, and yeah, just that nervous hour wait before the game. When the teams are read out, you kind of just want it to start, but then you're sort of filling in the time. So it's like, yeah, sink a couple of pints and get ready to rock and roll. And we didn't have to wait too long once the game started. So before we get into that, team line. So the big call was obviously that Callum McGregor wasn't fit enough to start. So he only made the bench. So that left an unchanged team, I believe. I think it was the same team we put out the week before starting, yes. Yeah. McGregor on the bench, and I think that was really the only change. And then the main sort of talking point probably from Rangers' point of view was no recognised sort of left-back and Dijon Sterling sort of slotting into that left-back position. we kind of felt beforehand, Paul, that they'd maybe set up a bit to sort of try and counter Callum McGregor, although he wasn't actually starting. And obviously we sort of got off to an absolute flyer. Paul, I suppose, just thoughts leading up to the game. Obviously, the big talking point was, would McGregor make it or not? So that's obviously something to discuss, the team lines. And then just, yeah, what were you feeling? And I suppose take us into your overall arching thoughts on the game itself.
Yeah, well, it's worth lingering on their team a little bit because that's absolutely how I felt. Is I did think in the week that if they suspected McGregor was going to play, they would look to shut him down, because particularly in the first game when obviously Beale was the manager, he got the freedom of Ibrox and he absolutely pulled the strings that day. And whilst he wasn't afforded as much time and space at the home game, he definitely when he freed himself, he was instrumental then as well. So I thought they would man mark him or even like look to put two players to pressure. And I think that's why Tom Lawrence was picked. So, you know, if you keep across the, you know, most of what their fans were saying, I think most of them thought Cantwell would start because they think he's some sort of creative force. But I suspected they would forgo the perceived creativity for a bit more of a blend between that and Steele to try and shut down McGregor. And I think that's why Lawrence was picked. And then obviously McGregor he didn't start. And having not started, and we'll probably get into some more detail, for me, Callum McGregor either starts or, you know, it's very rare you see him coming off the bench. He clearly wasn't match fit. So there's then a question mark over whether he should come off the bench at all. And that's one we can get into when we get further through and chatting into that.
Yep.
You're right, that was the only decision to be made. The team pretty much picked itself now that it's coming back to nearly full strength. And whilst, you know, everyone's a bit disappointed for Kyle not to be in there, if he's not match fit, and he clearly wasn't, you know, you've got to go with the fit players and he was okay again. We talk a bit in that dead hour that you talk about, you just want to get going. Now you look at it two ways. You go, well, you want to ride out the first 15-20 minutes because there's likely to be an onslaught, and there was that in the last game at Ibrox, and then we weathered that storm and then pretty much ran the show afterwards. Or you get, you know, you get your hopes up and you think, well, if we could nick an early goal, that just sets things up brilliantly. And you know, you can't really get much earlier than 21, 22 seconds.
I think it's not quite Chris Sutton quick, but Chris, it's still Sutton pretty quick.
19, yeah, so it was about 20 years ago. For any younger viewers and listeners, yeah, about 20 years ago, he got one at Ibrox, I think, 19 seconds. We've probably been given offside, I think, with VAR these days. But he stuck one away, and yeah, it's brilliant. It's classic Maida. It's one of the reasons why he's one of the first names on the team sheet in a game against them, because he terrifies Tavernier, and he terrifies him going forward, and he stifles his attacking intent as well. And he's probably 5 or 6 yards behind Tavernier when the ball's locked. And I did think this was quite ironic that they pumped long balls most of the day. That was their tactic. And our opening goal comes just from a hoofed clearance from Joe Hart. You know, he does the right thing, takes the pressure off, and it should be doing nothing. Tavernier's got 5 or 6 yards, like I say. He's got all the time in the world. He's snoozing a bit. He's, you know, he's not on it from the first seconds. Maeda is, as he always is, and he's off and after him, and he's putting pressure on. And then he gets a bit of luck for his hard work and his desire. Tavernier's had a nightmare, to be honest. He, you know, he can put that nearly anywhere, but he tries to play it. Instead of going back to his keeper and maybe putting his keeper under a little bit of pressure, albeit he hit a half-decent pass and there's not an issue, he just punts it back up the pitch where it came from. But for some reason, he doesn't want to go back to Butland, and he tries to kick it out for a throw-in. Maeda's right down his neck and gets a block in. And then Butland's, he's napping as well. He gets caught, you know, you could be sympathetic if you're in the goalies union, but I think he should do better. Yeah, it could go anywhere, but it goes quite near him and flies into the net. And yeah, we're in dreamland. I'm wearing my mate's pint, which you had literally just bought. I managed to save, I only lost an inch out of the top of mine, but his all ended up over me and the glass smashed on the floor. Yep. So yeah, that was obviously a complete accident. Somebody very jubilant in front of us just knocked it clean out of his hands. And then, yeah, so I'm wearing beer for the rest of the match, but I didn't really care too much about that at that point because, yeah, what a start. And, yeah, more than we could have wished for. And to be there, to be fair, the first half just got better. Overarching thoughts, I'm not one of the people that said I would have taken the draw. I was pretty bullish last week. A few people said I was everywhere last week. I was on the three different shows last week. But I was pretty adamant that I thought we had a good enough team to win. Stand by that. So the overarching feeling is disappointment for me. 2-0 up and probably should have been further ahead at halftime. And I think if we do go in 3-0 at halftime, they're not coming back from that. And then, as we've talked about ad nauseum this season on this show, it's another game of two halves where we can't continue a performance through the full 90 or 100 minutes. We drop off majorly. We expect them to come back. And we'll get into the stuff, you know, the detail and referees and all that. But even accounting for all of that, there was enough there. We shot ourselves in the foot too often. At 2-0, we should close it out. At 3-2 going into injury time, we should close it out. So I see it as a massive chance missed. If we win, and I said last week, if we won yesterday, I don't think they come back from that. I think that's nails and coffin time. And we've left the door open. Now, I know a lot of people are saying it was more important not to lose. You know, it's all still in our hands. But it is in our hands. But unless they slip up, we've got to win six games in a row. Now, we are coming into some form. We have got players back. But we've only put a run of six wins in a row together once this season. I think going back into October, when we had nearly everyone back fit before those injuries started to kick in. So I feel much, you thought I was stressed yesterday. I'd feel much more relaxed if we'd done the job and finished the job yesterday. So yeah, whilst being circumspect, you go, well, it's still in our hands, and it is. I do feel like we've really let a golden opportunity go by to get this done and dusted sooner. Because who knows, bad luck, slip up, terrible refereeing decisions.
Injury.
Yeah, all of these things are still in the game and they're still in play. And six games, you know, it'll be interesting to see how they do. I know we've got, you know, they've got seven games. Obviously, they play on Wednesday. We've got four at home and two away. They're the opposite. I get all of that, but they were there for the taking yesterday. And we should be sitting here today, 4 points clear, with a third win against them this season. So, yeah, whilst I get the sort of, you know.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Polishing a turd or you know, putting a brave face in it, we should have beaten them yesterday. So that's kind of where I'm feeling it. And we were the architects of our own misfortune.
Who's the snitch? Hail, hail, gentlemen. Well, hail, hail to you, snitch. I'm going to sort of say that I feel, you know, similar sort of lines. I'm sort of walking home last night from the pub and I'm sort of thinking, how do I feel about this? And it's probably like, yeah, okay, no damage done. But then that was a golden opportunity to really just take the pressure off. You know, the pressure will still be there, but like sets you up with a buffer, gets you back on top, regardless of the result during the week with Dundee. 2-0, 3-2. You know, you'd sort of say, well, in those two opportunities to sort of see a game out and to win the match. I know, obviously, a lot of factors against us. And I think probably the one thing that, you know, I didn't really factor in that probably did play a part was player fatigue. So actual players not having played many minutes. So Rio Itati being probably the prime example, like he did sort of fall in a bit of a hole as the game went on. So definitely that second half, his output had dropped off. Then the flow on effect to that is Matt O'Riley doing a lot more running and covering for Itati. And then he ends up coming off because he's, you know, blown a gasket or blown a fuse as well. So, and then the flip side to that is bringing on McGregor, who again, hasn't had many minutes, probably struggled to certainly send it up to the tempo of the match. You know, is directly responsible for the second goal that did stand for Rangers. It was a slack square pass. And then ultimately I think it was his trailing leg that deflected off for the goal. It was PM and Scales, but I think I watched it back enough times to think it was McGregor. So you just sort of thinking, well, if he was fitter, or he was fit, he'd have started. And then if Itati had been back a few weeks earlier, you would have got closer to 90 minutes out of him. And then, you know, you're not putting as much pressure and stress on McGregor. I'm seeing quite a lot of criticism for Iwata, sort of giving the ball away. I didn't really sort of see that last night. And I don't know maybe whether I was mistaking Iwata for Itati, because obviously we were at the club and you couldn't really hear the commentary. And, you know, from what I was perceiving to maybe be Rio Itati giving the ball away, it might actually be Iwata in a couple of instances. So you factor all that in and we were still 2-0 up at halftime. And then, as you say, there was a couple of golden opportunities there to really be further ahead. You sort of, you know, and as my old man, like at halftime, he's like, we should be further ahead. And I'm saying, we've just put in a really, really good first half performance in their home patch. They've just been booed off the ground at halftime. And you're saying, oh, we should be further ahead. Like, you're great, you know, well done picking the negative out of that half. But he was right, because I mean, at the end of it, wasn't enough. So I guess, you know, I mean, cracking way to start the game. You're 1-0 up after 22 seconds, takes the pressure off to a certain extent, but we really set up with a high press and Rangers just couldn't cope with that. They just kept giving the ball away. Tavernier just, you know, I've never seen him give the ball away so many times. Even Golson and Suter, who I don't really rate Suter, but you know, Golson's usually their rock at the back. They were just either having to kick it long and it was just coming straight through to Joe Hart, or it wasn't even getting that far and like Iwata and Itati were picking it up and turning the turnover straight back into an attack. Maeda, first half, I mean, the whole game, I mean, he didn't stop, but that first half, I mean, every time he got the ball out wide, you felt something was going to happen. He really had a good chance to make it a double. I mean, that one where he did manage to sort of break through and one-on-one with Butland. I mean, you know, if you're being critical, he should do better. He sort of put it down Butland's throat. I mean, Butland still has to save it, but if he puts that a couple of yards either side, then, you know, the keeper's got a really good save to make. But that, for me, would really, that, you know, that would have really blown the barn doors open sort of thing. And then I suppose from there, it's, there's a header from Matt O'Riley, and then we get to that penalty, which initially I didn't sort of see it live, because again, you're sort of just wondering how, like, Steele's sort of scrambling to get the ball, and you're thinking, could he have done better? Could he have got more of a connection on it? And I didn't really see it at the time, and then the ball gets humped out the park, and the next minute there's a VAR check, and yeah, there's a little bit of silence in the club because it's like, oh, hang on a minute. And then next minute, and John Beaton's getting called over to the monitor, and you're thinking, well, if he's getting called over the monitor, like, you know, chances are this is going to be a penalty. And sure enough, I mean, Connor Golson actually finally gets pinged for a handball inside the box. I mean, the shock. So, Paul, where were you at this point in time in your thoughts? And I suppose, is there anything I've glossed over in the first 20 minutes? Because I suppose there was a brandish yellow card as well. I suppose we can sort of maybe touch on that now, or we can come back to John Beaton's overall performance as we get towards the other controversial penalty decision. But we'll start with the handball.
Well, yeah, I'll just go touch on the Meira chance. I think the Meira chance is gilt-edged and he should score. It's O'Reilly finds him with a great little pass through the channel. Again, he's completely unmarked. I don't know what Tavernier's doing at that point. He's drifted off him. And yeah, he just kind of chokes it a bit. Like he just needs to open his body up and sort of try and get a bit of curl on it and take it away from Butland and put it in the far corner, or even just put his laces through it. But he does sort of neither, and he just kind of chokes it down, and it's a routine save when really he should be scoring. The O'Reilly header, you know, so from one sort of poor play by Meira, and probably his only bit of poor play in the first half, to be honest. He then pops up in the middle, almost to the right, laying it off to Kuhn. Kuhn delivers a brilliant ball in for O'Reilly, and he has a good header, and it's a really good tip over. But from that corner comes the penalty. So, you know, one or the other, you can't really effectively count them as both, because if it goes in, you don't get the corner, and then you're not going to get the pen. So the penalty, I missed it as well. You just assume it's coming off a head or a shoulder. But yeah, as soon as you see the replay, if VAR sees it, then they call it as they see it. But that doesn't always ring true, as we'll find out later. But yeah, Goldson's hanging out. You know, his elbow is at a weird kind of position. He's sort of almost sticking it further out in its
sort outside of a silhouette.
Yeah. It's not a natural place. You know, your arms come up when you jump for a header, but it's kind of pushed further out as well. So yeah, I think it's as clear a penalty as you're going to see, to be honest, particularly under the rules as they stand at the minute. And so yeah, despite the shock of you know, us getting a good decision via VAR, it was the right one. And then the next question from there is who's going to take it? I've spent many a day on here saying, why is Matt O'Reilly not on penalties? Because he's probably the best ball striker in the club. And eventually, after every man and his dog has had one or two and missed some, it's an absolute, it's ice in the vein stuff to pull out the Panenka at Pactime Rocks none of your own fans, and just clip it down the middle. It takes balls of steel, and it was absolute class from Matt O'Reilly, and he was great all day. And I take the point about, you know, him probably doing a bit more extra work, and maybe that's what tired him out. But, and we can come on to this a bit later in terms of subs and stuff, but Rodgers gets a lot of praise for how we set up and how the first half went. But he's culpable in mistakes as well, and I think Matt O'Reilly should have stayed on the pitch for the remaining minutes, and McGregor, in my view, shouldn't have come on. If McGregor's fit to start, he starts. If he isn't, he's probably not fit. In which case, why is he coming into the heat of battle at all? You probably would have put Bernardo on a bit earlier. Because we know that he's got an engine. He knows he'll put a shift in. I think there is an error there, but we're sort of getting ahead of ourselves in terms of it's as good a start as you could possibly hope for. 2-0 up after, 35 minutes. And yeah, there's still 10, 15 minutes of that first half to go, and really, you just felt if that half went on a little bit longer, we would have got a third.
Yeah, the halftime break probably came at the right time for them, not necessarily
absolutely
for us.
We should mention that before we finish rounding out the first half, that we should mention Joe Hart, because, you know,
I was in the toilet at this point.
We go in at 2-0 and we were a bit disappointed that it's not 3, but it could very easily have been 2-1, because they break right in injury time. And he makes a great, you know, it's definitely a great first save. It might even be a double save, but there's other players in there blocking, and we mop it up from there. But that was their first shot on target, a bit like us at Livy last week. It was an injury time of the first half. That kind of tells you how dominant we were. So yeah, we should have made that dominance count and sort of pushed it through. But unfortunately, we kind of took our foot off the gas second half a bit and tried to do a bit of game management, and it didn't really work for us.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like I said, at halftime that the Rangers players are getting booed off the ground. So you're obviously sort of thinking, well, we've managed to first silence the crowd and then get that sort of reaction at halftime. So you're sort of thinking, well, you can't really ask much more from Celtic from that point of view. Like, we've managed to achieve or set out what we, you know, what they would have wanted to have achieved there. But I guess you've got to expect that you would expect some sort of response from Rangers. And obviously into that second half, they'd obviously, you know, start becoming a little bit more, getting on more of the front foot. I guess at halftime we were discussing sort of possible changes. I guess the concern was the picking up of 3 soft yellow cards. So at that point there was yellow cards to Kuhn for a very light shirt pull, which John Beaton kind of translated to, well, you know, your team's doing all these soft fouls, so therefore you're the sacrificial lamb, you're the one that gets the yellow card. I'm like, I don't think that's how it works, John. This isn't basketball.
Yeah, he's pointing all over the ground where Kuhn's never been in the whole half. So he's made up a new rule there that, you know, it's
that one's transgression. I guess Carter Vickers was lucky not to get a yellow card for kicking the ball away from the free kick, which was a wee bit controversial, sort of. It was very early in the game, so I guess you suppose you get away with that one early doors. But again, another day, that could have, you know, easily been a yellow card and put him under immense pressure. You had Matt O'Reilly was on a yellow card by that point, and the other one on a yellow was Alistair Johnson coming together with Fabio Silva, who probably spent more time on the ground than actually on his feet. What an absolute disgrace for footballer. I mean, he just looks, I wouldn't be able to watch that every week. If that was playing for my team, I'd just be like, sorry, but it was disgraceful. And obviously we're going to touch, well, we may as well get into that now. We're sort of nearly rounding the half hour mark anyway. So the second half, again, although Rangers were sort of had a few half chances, we were sort of just meeking it out, and we're just try to get to grips for the second half. Tired legs. Obviously, you sort of started to look at the likes of Kuhn, who I didn't really feel got really into the game terribly much. Obviously, carrying the booking, which, you know, probably maybe hampered them in terms of trying to be aggressive on the press and try to win the ball back. So I kind of felt that he was an obvious substitution. And then, you know, the other one being Hatate, because I thought, well, you know, he's starting to run out of legs, and we really needed a bit of a lift in the midfield. But Paul, the changing point in the match is obviously the reversal of a yellow card for simulation for Fabio Silva, when Alistair Johnson manages to stick his foot out, clear the ball away, and then basically do Inspector Gadget and sort of retract his leg. But there's obviously very minimal contact, as Silva is already on his way down. He connects with Alistair Johnson's knee.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It's only a kick, a jump, a block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
And falls over. John Beaton, being 4 yards away, runs immediately over, issues yellow cards to Silva for simulation, which, you know, we're all applauding that decision because we're going, well, how many times is that point? That was like the third or fourth time he'd splattered himself over the ground looking for, trying, you know, get a foul out of, you know, off the referee. And then next minute, he's been called over to the monitor and VAR's shown a very 2 second slow-mo of the contact, but no actual showing of Alistair Johnson actually winning the ball first and just overlooking the fact that Silva's already on his way down before contact was made. So I'm baffled. I really thought that if there was ever a decision where a referee could stand by his convictions and say, actually, I was 4 feet away, I was right the first time, I'm going to stick with my original decision, and I'm just going to leave it at that. But to then reverse the yellow card, turn and say, no, it's a penalty. And then you had the Rangers players trying to say to John Beaton, well, that should be a second yellow card for Alistair Johnson, which thankfully didn't happen. Because, I mean, you can imagine the uproar then, like a reversal of a decision that ends up with a sending off and a penalty. It's just... yeah, it was what we all feared, like, going at this game, like, you know, Beaton and the VAR referee.
Nick Walsh
on the VAR. You're thinking, you know, they're going to get the rub of the green at some point, and this was just, like, trying to find a leveler. And it was, if it wasn't a soft yellow card, then this was the perfect opportunity to overturn, which, you know, is that a clear and obvious error? No. It wasn't. And like I said, for me, Silva was already on his way down before the contact. He was anticipating the contact, but it never really came. And for me, it's rewarding cheating. It's something that the game's tried to eradicate. Football, FIFA have tried to eradicate diving and simulation from football. We're still can't seem to do that because there was one in the Liverpool Man United game that was equally soft, and you know, you could, again, that ended up being a penalty, and I'm sort of saying, well, that's, you know, almost on a par with this. But I that unfortunately does change momentum, because Tavernier, he takes a good penalty, you know, Joe Hart makes a good effort at it, and had it been lower, I think Joe Hart would have got a hand to it, but absolute rifle down at the top corner, you know, keeper's not saving that. That makes it 2-1, and then it's game on from that point on. But Paul, Dermot Gallagher, referee watch, he stuck by, funnily enough, all the decisions that John Beaton made or didn't make, because actually VAR had to correct him on 3 separate occasions. But you know, I watched it back just before we came on, and I'm just going, like, oh, what's the point? Like, you've just got a referee just going with what the other referee's done. Like, there's like a cliquey union. They're never going to undermine each other, are they? So what was your thoughts on that one?
I think the first thing that's worth saying is Fabio Silva, as you said, was all over the pitch, you know, making a meal of everything. From what I can see online today, a good chunk of his team supporters are just embarrassed and think he's a disgrace, despite the fact that he obviously helped them win a penalty. So if the ref's bold enough and brave enough first half, he books him for one of those, and then he'll be thinking twice about whether he's going to do it again. You can see there's some great footage where you can see the Rangers support behind our goal when he goes down, and they're all screaming at him to get up, and, you know, annoyed with him that nobody's claiming for a penalty. Nobody on the pitch was claiming for a penalty apart from him, and the fans weren't claiming for a penalty. They were telling him to get his act together and get up off the ground. I did go and find the laws of the, because at this point, the rules of the game seem to have changed a fair bit since I played the game regularly. But the rule reads, is it legal if a player gets the ball first, which is the main point I think a lot of Celtic fans are making, that he got the ball. So, you know, by their understanding, used to be the rules, you know, you get the ball, it can't be a foul. Not necessarily the case. While challenging for the ball, a player first touches the ball and then make contact with an opponent, may this action be penalised by the referee? The decision will depend on the exact nature of the challenge. So it's already pretty grey when you get to that. It must be emphasised that playing the ball first does not necessarily mean that a challenge is legal. It is a direct free kick or penalty kick if a challenge or tackle is careless, reckless, or uses excessive force. It does not matter if there is contact with the ball or not. A player makes unfair contact with the ball and an opponent at the same time or afterwards. Now, so for me, it's completely down to interpretation, which then, to the earlier point, is how can you say it's clear and obvious if it's that grey and can be interpreted? So a challenge or tackle is careless, reckless, or uses excessive force. So it's definitely not excessive force. It's definitely not reckless. The closest to that description you could say careless, but come on, it's so flimsy.
The thing though is,
you're right, he's already going down. So,
but he's also retracting his leg. He's taking his leg away. You know, his leg's not growing into Silva, his leg's coming away from Silva.
He's played the ball, and then his leg, as the leg comes back, he throws himself into the leg. So yeah, it's not, for me, it's not a penalty. Obviously, I think, you know, that's the conclusion most of us are going to arrive at. Obviously, they'll find a way to paint it in. You know, there's contact, so you're entitled to go down, etc., etc. And you know, in the modern game, if there is contact, you are entitled to go down. But the difference is here is he's, to your point, he's anticipating the contact. It's not he has contact and then he goes down. He's already fallen over into AJ's outstretched leg. So yeah, it's a poor decision. I'm not sure, other than a leveling up, or leveling the ledger, I'm not sure why Nick Walsh is getting involved there. Like, our penalty is as clear as day, and he's sort of my biggest grievance is, you're right, he doesn't show the footage of the angle that shows him touching the ball. He just shows the contact. Like, that's all he needs to do. It's soft. It's really, really soft. And I don't think it's clear and obvious. And I don't think Nick Walsh needs to get involved. I think Beaton called it right on the park. And that's what Brendan Rodgers said in his post-match interview as well.
So Patrick's saying here that Walsh got involved to make Beaton look impartial. Yeah, possibly. And he's saying that was well planned. Stephen Reyes says that AJ doesn't stretch his leg and that AJ had a poor game and was at fault here. I mean, obviously, he ended up giving away the penalty. So, I mean, you know, he's very aware of that. And he's obviously, he had a little emoji after the game with a zipped lip and a bit of a frowning face. So, obviously, you know, he feels hard done by. But, you know, players often will.
To the broader point, I didn't think he did have a great game. Like, you know, he had a solid enough first half as they all did, but he was poor. As much as I don't think it should have been overturned, he gets himself in a tangle and gets kind of squared up by him. To the points that some people are making, both here in the comments and more broadly, that the ball was still live even after he got the touch, I don't really take that point. That he knocked it at an angle away and Carter Vickers is coming round to sweep up. So I'm not buying that Silva's, you know, on the other end of that and bearing in on goal with a real good opportunity. So I think that, you know, goes against the any sort of positive outcome that could have come if he got round the other side. But I do think AJ's allowed himself to be a bit clumsy. He's probably a bit of a victim there of had a relatively poor game. Like, he hasn't been as influential. This was my concern about Kuhn, not because of, I think he's a talented player and he started to show that once he's got his fitness up, but sometimes your debut in these games can pass you by completely. And I feel like it did a bit. Obviously, he had a good cross for the O'Reilly header, which obviously the penalty comes from the corner after that, but just generally, I thought it kind of passed him by a little bit. And maybe, look, we probably didn't get him enough service. More stuff came down our left. But yeah, he probably wasn't backing up as much as Maeda would have been on the other side in terms of giving support to the fullback. So it probably did leave Alistair Johnstone a little bit isolated. But yeah, he was at fault somewhat there. And I think he's at fault on their equalizer as well, the final equalizer. But we'll get into that in a little bit.
So a few minutes after they score to make it 2-1, Rangers obviously thought that they'd equalized through Dessels, but only to have VAR intervene yet again. So in this situation, Iwata is fouled in the build-up. So basically the start of the attack, the turnover play, and Beaton was in a very good position to see this one and decide to let it go when, you know, he was blowing those sorts of fouls for Rangers all day long. And he decides to let this one go. And I'm like, that's not consistent. And then obviously it breaks through, they score the goal. And then Nick Walsh again intervenes and says, well, actually, you need to have a look at this. And compared to the Alistair Johnson one, there was far more contact with this tackle in the middle of the park. And he had to overturn the decision. And it's like, you should just have called that as a foul in the first place, because you were there, he saw it, he let it go. And I went, that's that unconscious bias just creeping in just a wee bit, because obviously we were 23 fouls to their 12 or whatever it was, our four yellow cards to their zero. So I went, well, that serves you right, because, you know, that it should never have got that far, because obviously that allowed them to break down the middle. Probably still a little bit dismayed by how easily they broke us down after that tackle, right enough, but still, obviously, Iwata was claiming for the foul, and he should have got it then and there. So that allows us to make some substitutions. So that within the next 10 minutes, we make some subs. So Callum McGregor coming on for Rio Itadi, and we've got Yang coming on for Kuhn. And then 4 minutes after that, Adam Ida coming on for Kyogo Furuhashi. So at that point, they make a couple of changes. So Matondo comes on for Silva, and Cantwell comes on for Lawrence. And then they also end up making another change. So Kieran Dyle coming on for Diamande, and then we end up bringing on Paolo Bernardo for Matt O'Reilly on the 82nd minute. So then 4 minutes after that, that's when Rangers equalise, and it unfortunately our captain, who plays a rather slack pass square, catching Yang flat-footed. It wasn't a great pass, but then Yang was obviously very slow to react as well, and that allows Rangers to break. And then ultimately, the shot ricocheting off McGregor and sort of going in at the back of the net and deflected goal, giving Joe Hart absolutely no chance. Paul, does the blame lie squarely with McGregor on this one? Is there anybody else that you feel could be done better? I mean, all right, you don't give the ball away, you don't give them a chance. I mean, obviously that's the cardinal rule here. But could we have done anything differently? Obviously, if he decides to play up down the line rather than square.
Well, he's looking to play up the line. I think that's what he's going to do. And he sort of gets a little bit closed down. And from there, he just has, a bit of a brain fart. Rule 101, don't play a square ball about across your box. It's dangerous. And two, definitely don't do it when you're not looking properly. Like, it's almost a no-look pass.
Look away.
Right into the danger area. Like, to me, if anything summed up that he wasn't ready or match fit, that's it. It's a massive error for a player who, you know, normally just wouldn't make those kind of errors. So it's an error by him, but it's equally an error by the manager. So, you know, he's seen him for the however many training sessions there were. I think two, he only was back Friday. I think we trained lightly on Saturday. I know McGregor would have said, you know, I want to play. But at some point, there's a decision made that he doesn't start. Now, I said it, touched on it at the beginning. McGregor hardly ever comes off the bench, even when he's coming back from other injuries, you know, when the face mask and all of that stuff. He starts and you get 60 minutes out of him or 65, and then he comes off. So for him to be judged to not be able to finish, get through 60 minutes, he shouldn't have been on the bench, as far as I'm concerned. Or if he's on the bench, it's there just to concern them with no intention of putting him in. Bernardo should have been on for Hatate. Leave it as is. I think there's another error, and it you know, it's easy to be smart after, you know, after the fact, but I said it at the time. I didn't think Yang should have been the one that came off the bench. It should have been Forrest. You know, Yang gives you more creativity, but at the point in the match he comes on, we're not looking for his creativity, really. We're looking for old heads, experience, solidity. Yeah, yeah, you've been over the course, done the fixture. And Forrest is better defensively than Yang. And he's been, you know, how many derbies has he played in? Tons. And he... I think he'd have given that solidity, and I'm 99% sure that Matondo wouldn't have waltzed past him quite as easily, and bent one into the
top corner. It just showed him the line,
or just even more pressure. There wasn't enough pressure on that one. So we jumped the gun, but I think there's two tactical errors in terms of the substitutions.
But then the flip side is Bernardo and Ida link up to score what we thought was the winning goal. He got it half right. So.
Yeah, he did. But I think if you get Bernardo on earlier and leave McGregor on the bench, then it's you don't need the third goal because it's not 2-2.
It's true.
I think that's. There's some errors there, and it's just a scrappy goal. The main error is the pass, but then he's turning his back on the shot and it flicks off him. It's like, once you made the first error, don't compound it by turning your back on the player. Like, just get right out, and if you take one in the chops, then you take one in the chops. Like, this is the biggest game of the season, and he's a bit unlucky. But second half. Even the Dessers one, when the ball was pinballing around our box and we weren't just clearing our lines, it was generally pretty poor back there. I thought Carter Vickers had a really good game, but those around him didn't really have as much composure. Second half we invited them on and we got punished for it. And as I said at the top of the show, we were sort of the architects of our own issues. With daft stuff like, you know, that loose pass and just dropping deeper, and everything that went for us in the first half and everything that we did well and that, you know, got us into the position that we got ourselves into, we sort of backed away from. And again, I can't help but think that that's probably partly the manager's direction as well. You know, the team's direct, you know, we're, 2-0. I think the halftime team talk is, you know, game management. Whereas if we just continue to play our game, again, you know, they've got to worry about us. And, you know, in pre-game reviews last week, I was saying they should be worrying about us. And then obviously they picked a team that was worried about us. So that's the advantage. Go and push that home. And we backed off and we kind of got what we deserved, to be honest. But let's get on to the third goal for us. It's a really good goal. I don't know what they're doing defensively. We transition it quickly. Bernardo puts in a great ball into Ida, but then he's got plenty to do at that point. He managed to shift it under his feet. And I think Butland will be a bit disappointed with that as well. But I think it's probably he's caught him a bit, you know, off balance because he's shooting through, I think, two sets of legs.
The pressure of Gareth Southgate watching you. Potentially for a Euro 23 birth in Germany.
I did see a tweet saying it was a bit strange that he was there to see Joe Hart, but you'd probably be better off with Joe Hart.
Tell you what, you could probably take Joe Hart. Beat your near post, beat me a back pass deflection, and the penalty, you can't do much about it. He got penetrated as well, so he still has a couple of really good saves, but still, like, he's had better days at the office. It was a fantastic goal for me there, because I mean he had a lot to do. I mean, the ball from Bernardo in was a great angled pass in, and it had the right pace and it got him into a good position, but he still had two defenders, one up his backside and one in front of him, and he's managed to get them to run into one another, and like you say, you probably almost expect him to play across Butland, but he's beat him at the near post. So cracking finish. And you're thinking 3-2. I mean, if I wasn't deaf already by that point, that the place absolutely erupted, so there was beer everywhere. And by that point, I was soaked, and I'm thinking, all right, we're just trying to see this out. We've got, what, 12 minutes to go? Obviously, we knew there was going to be a ton of injury time. And as we already touched on, you know, some very slack defending from Yang. I think AJ misses just clearing the ball in the play out, and he was very casual. And if he'd got a foot through that, actually, he could easily have hit that rose ed, and he sort of just missed it. And just that was disappointing. And then, as much as like Yang stood off him, and yeah, he got flat footed and should have showed him the line. Defending 101, don't let the attacker cut back in on his right, on his preferred foot. Take him to the line, make him cross it. Anything can happen. We didn't do that. But then AJ sort of in no man's land as well. I'm sort of thinking, well, why is he not maybe just applying a little bit more pressure and just putting a 2-on-1? And just like, he wasn't marking anybody. Cantwell was sort of drifting behind him. But there were other players there. We had heaps of bodies. It wasn't like we were caught on the break or we were out of position. We had heaps of players there. We just didn't apply the pressure. And that's, for me, probably the most disappointing thing. You're thinking, well, we're less than 10 minutes to go, or whatever it was. Well, at that point, there was only 5 minutes to go when they scored. But you know, you're thinking, you should be chasing every single like player down. Just give it, you've only got 5 minutes to go. Just, you know, just, obviously, by that point, everyone's tired and you know, the fatigue plays a part, and then that affects your like your mentality, and your brain starts to go. But I just kind of feel we just missed a trick there. And don't take anything away from Matondo. It is a fantastic finish, but is he doing that if he's under more pressure? I mean, if we're closing him down and he still managed to do that, well, even it's an even better goal. But I kind of feel that he had the time in the world to look up, pick his spot, curl it in, and you know, Joe Hart's got no chance. Like, that's, you know, he's beat the keeper there. But I just think that, you know, you just, if he had his time again, and to your point, you know, I was talking to Dad about this today, and he said the exact same thing as you, Paul. He says James Forrest was the shout. He should have been the one that, because he's played wing back as well, so he would have had enough nose there, I think, to sort of shuffle that one out. But unfortunately, Yang looked a little bit powder puff. I felt strength-wise, he got hustled and bustled a bit, and he couldn't really get into the game much either. It was hard by that point because the game had sort of changed. So like you say, maybe not the right substitution in the first place. I still think Kuhn should have come off, but who we replaced him with, maybe not the right call.
He should have come off.
One other thing I just wanted to say, just quickly, was the head knock again. It was Yang clashed heads. Mm-hmm. And Beaton's playing on, thinking he was faking it, and the replay shows clearly that he clashed heads, and you know, head knock. It should be immediately stopping play and checking on the welfare of the player. But again, Beaton just letting the game run on, and again, you know, these are little things for me that say that, like, you know, these are little 1%ers that just over the course of a game can just gives them an edge that you know, that we don't seem to get. But you know, again, that was a poor decision on his part, because he was within 5 yards of that one as well, so he should have noted the head knock straight away and stopped the play. But he allowed a Rangers attack to go first and then pulled it back after that.
Well, like, both that and the Lawrence on a Wata one, there's no excuse for either of them. He's really close, he's got a clear view, he just chooses not to apply the laws as they should be applied. You're right, Matondo is a great strike, but Yang is super slack and there's not enough pressure. But you're right, and I sort of alluded to earlier on, I think AJ is nearly as culpable here as well, because he's doing nothing. Like, except, well, the only thing he does do is he flinches and he turns his back on the shot. Again, if he stands up, probably hits him in the face. Now, I get that you don't want to get hit in the face, but hitting the face, you're probably, you know, well on your way to winning the title yesterday. So disappointing in just in terms of, you know, multiple, but as I've said, you know, plenty of times before, is just as a unit, we don't defend well enough. We're much better with Carter Vickers back, clearly. But there's only so far he can elevate every other player's game. And unfortunately, we lack composure at times defensively. And we've allowed them a lifeline when when they should have been dead and buried. And actually had a snapshot really right on the full-time whistle that, you know, would have been speculative, but it just flashed past the post, so it could have actually been worse. Which
it could have been, but thankfully it wasn't. And I'd sort of said, I don't know if I said this on air last week, but my feeling was that we needed to put in a 90-minute performance if we were going to get a win. You know, with the refereeing and the fact that it's their ground and, you know, no away support and all the things that are against us, you know, players coming back from injury, we needed to put in a complete performance. And unfortunately, we probably got 60 minutes of a performance, I would say, over the course of 90 minutes. But, you know, there was just, we didn't do that for 90. And that's what Jerry Burns is saying here. He's saying, you know, we had trouble as we're not playing for the whole 90. And it's the story of our season, really. We've really struggled to put two halves of football together where you'd say that the first half and the second half are of an equal standard quality. You know, under the Ange era, it was like, we never stop. Like, you know, it doesn't matter whether it's the first minute or the 90th minute. They're going for the jugular. There's an identity there. They kept going. And I'm not saying we don't keep going now, but it's just the ebbs and flows in our game at the moment, just they're quite noticeable. And, you know, tactically, you're right, Paul, there probably was, you know, a tactical change. And Maish is sort of alluding to that here. But, you know, sometimes if you've got them on toast, why change it? I realize that, like, all right, fatigue plays a part and, you know, you might not be able to maintain that intensity for a whole 90 minutes. But if you can maintain it for 75, 80 minutes and you're still 2-0 up, or, you know, hopefully by then you'd be scored more and you're 3-0 up or whatever, 3-1, then, you know, the job's essentially done by then, and then you can bring on your substitutes or, you know, make some changes and tweak it. But I just kind of felt maybe we tweaked it a little bit too early and just invited unnecessary pressure. And, you know, obviously I'd expect a response from them, but like you say, if they're pushing forward, then that just leaves more space up top. And then that's when you've got to be a bit more creative in finding Kyogo and Maeda in the channels and just play it a wee bit longer in the space and have Tavernier, you know, having to track back and chase back because he doesn't like it. When they concede that goal in the first 20 seconds, he's pointing the finger at Golson and going, why didn't you run back? Like, why am I tracking back? I'm not, basically saying I'm not a defender. I mean, that's basically what he's saying.
Is he? He's not a defender. He just happens to play, be slotted in at right back because
he's a glorified right winger sort of thing, really. And he gets away with it nearly every week, but except in Europe.
He's a set piece specialist. That's what he is. He's a set piece specialist. That's why he's in the team. You're spot on. And it's the points I was making about how we should be setting up, like, and I touched on it earlier. You know, you're the better side. Go and let them worry about you. And I think Rogers has his moments, but I feel like he's overthought this and over-strategized this and tried to be a bit cute, and it's backfired. I think if he just keeps the gas down for the first 15, 20 minutes, we probably score another. And at 3-0, the game's done. But and we all know, you know, it's a massive cliche for a reason. 2-0 is dangerous because you let one in and it, you know, suddenly it's all back on the wire. And I saw one of the guys commented earlier, it's not dissimilar to the game. We won 3-2 at our place last season. And we nearly got a 3-3 draw that day. There it is, Patrick McLaughlin's comment. Spot on. It was very reminiscent of that. And therefore even more frustration around the place because, you know, it's all there for us. And as I said, we've shot ourselves in the foot multiple times and, you know, given them a bit of a lifeline. Like I said, I think if we win that match, we're more than halfway there. And as it stands, it's right on a wire now. Like, does anyone in the Celtic support feel confident we'll win six games in a row? You know, say it quickly, win six games in a row, we're the champions. Sounds easy. You know,
well, like Patrick McLaughlin makes a good point here. Says, you know, if we're in a situation where they only need a draw at Celtic Park, then, you know, that again, play, you know, it, you don't want to be in that scenario, but we could potentially be in that scenario. We have to win. And then that, you know, that changes the dynamic because, you know, effectively Rangers had to win last night and they didn't. We stopped them, but, you know, what's to say that they don't stop us? And then they're still a point clear. with by that point, I wouldn't imagine after the split, this will be like close to being the last game of the season. You'd imagine. They tend to avoid that, don't they? They don't really like it.
Yeah, case it's a decider. So I think it'll be the first or second game after the split, to be honest. Usually is.
Yeah. And then, you know, again, probably that suits them better than...
A draw or a win for them, assuming everything else goes as you would expect it. So there's only one result for us. We've left ourselves in a position where there's only one result for us. Now, people were arguing before this game that there's two results for us, a win and a draw. They were both a positive outcome. And they sort of are, but, you know, just, you know, fast forward down the road a few weeks, you've put yourself in a position where you've got to win. Now, I expected us to win yesterday. I absolutely expect us to win the home game. But, you know, we know that there's, you know, so many variables.
It's still a game of football, isn't it?
Yeah, so many variables in terms of, you know, the referee and rush of blood to the head, you know, and we, you know, reds, yellows, injuries. There's just too much that could potentially go wrong. And we've left ourselves from a really strong position yesterday. Let's make absolutely no mistake and no bones about the fact we were in a super strong position yesterday. And we blew it like that. There's no way to sugarcoat it. And the people that are saying, "Oh, I would have taken a draw beforehand," and so you know, once you balance it all out, we got a draw. So you know, forget about how far ahead we were. You can't. We were so much on top in that first half, and then we dropped off so badly second half that it almost feels like a defeat. Now I know Baldemort has been on saying it was a great victory, which.
It's England cricket team levels of a moral victory.
There's an actual bit where he says it's a great victory. And I saw Paddy Power did a brilliant post that said Rangers celebrating their 3-3 win, which, you know, we shouldn't be too churlish. I think a fair few of us celebrated a 0-0 win for Scotland against England at Wembley the other year. So
that's different.
It's not dissimilar to that, but yeah, it's they were very bullish and confident all week. Not necessarily the players and the manager, which is a bit of a refreshing change, but their support was fully expecting to win 3-4-0. Bizarre, but long and short of it is we've paid ourselves in a position where we've got win 6 in a row. I'm glad Smell the Gloves nice and confident.
Hey, he's got the confidence for all of us. I'll just quickly say the Celtic bench was pelted with coins. I think John, assistant coach, and my brain, Kennedy. I'm done. John Kennedy got pelted with a coin in the back of the head. Disgraceful. You know, you understand why Celtic doesn't want to take a small 200, 300 fans to that absolute midden if, like, you know, all the great happens get pelted with missiles. Not really much talk in the media about that so far today that I've seen. It's rubbish and, you know, it needs to be stamped out. But, you know, again, apparently it's two sides of the city problem, but it only ever seems to happen at their gaff. And then, as per usual, Alan McCoy's got his wish, you know, up to their knees and Fenian blood and all that sort of garbage. So again, that all came out as well. So yeah, like I said, you know, they were doing a lap of honour after the game, celebrating a 3-0 draw. I mean, you know, if that's the best they can do and they're looking for adulation for that and the fact their fans are happy with that, then I think that just says, you know, second best in Scotland and let's just make sure it stays that way. And there's a double to play for. And like I say, if we can string 6 or 7 games together, and well, actually probably 8 if we include the cup, it's on. But you know, the only positive I'd say is that McGregor's back, Hatate's back. They will get better. I think, you know, the obvious change will be McGregor starting and Iwata dropping back out. I think against some of the lower, you know, I think Iwata's been an able deputy and he's done a job. But obviously, you know, as soon as McGregor gets that match sharpness and fitness, then he's going to be back into that team. And it just adds another dynamic that we haven't had that Hatate, McGregor, O'Reilly
trio all season, really. I think that was pretty much, you know, one of only a handful of games where that's probably happened all season. So we, you know, we really, really need that to carry us through. And obviously Carter Vickers at the back and, you know, Kogo and Ida finding the goals. So like I said, it's all to play for. I believe we can do it, but, you know, this season has shown that, you know, we seem to do the unexpected and really find ways to shoot ourselves in the foot. So if we can eradicate that, then yeah, no problem. It's six games in a row is easy pickings, but if we continue to give away soft goals and make unforced errors, then we are going to make it very tough for ourselves. And I think it was Kevin on Axum last night, and I sort of agree. I can still see both teams dropping points outside of the fixture at Celtic Park. It would not surprise me in the slightest that, you know, we drop points and they also drop points. It's just that sort of season. We've not been vintage all year, and I hope, hand on my heart, I hope it happens. I hope we just find a gear and click. And I think having a run of home games will help, but that's not going to just do it on its own. We've got to put performances together, and they've got to be near on 90-minute performances. And that, for me, is our biggest problem, is that we put them in for half a game or 50, 60 minutes, but we need, you know, close to 90 minutes. And if we can do that, then, yeah, no problem. It's a League Cup, Scottish Cup double, but... Like I said, as the title says, it's a missed opportunity last night. And I'd much rather be 4 points clear with them having a game in hand. Or sorry, well, whoever works out to be, whoever the maths is on that one, well, what it would have been. But yeah, it's ought to be.
It would have been four. It would have been four with a game in hand.
Would have been four. Yeah.
But it's anyway, it's one with a game in hand. I think the only other thing to mention is, you're right, the squad is picking up at the right time. Palmer still to come back. He was apparently involved in training last week, but I didn't expect him to make the squad for obvious reasons. He's, you know, he's just back. He's another one who's ahead of schedule. So, you know, that'll add a bit more depth to the squad. Rayo looked great last week. He had a decent first half. He sort of faded, as most of them did. I think they suffered under the tactics as well, probably second half. But don't get me wrong. I still think we will and should go on and win the title. I just think it's a massive missed opportunity, as you said. I've got enough grey hairs. I didn't need the additional stress that this season's going to give to me, but looks like we're stuck with it. But hopefully getting these guys back and, you know, playing their way into match sharpness, we can hit our straps and get the job done over the next 6-8 games, if you include the cup. And yeah, if we can, you know, we've been so hit and miss this season. If we can somehow come away with a League and Cup double, you know, it's almost a miracle, to be honest. It's been such a poor season. But yeah, it's still there for us. So fingers crossed we can get it done.
I'll give you my man of the match, because usually I'll wait for everyone else to have their say, but I'll go first this week. So I'm going to go with Matt O'Riley. I thought he had the absolute stones to hit the penalty. He's not hit one all season, and he obviously it went in and it was fantastic. But, you know, obviously the flip side is that they can equally go amiss and he can look like an absolute tip, but he didn't. And I thought he had an excellent game, and obviously ran out of gas near the end and on a booking as well. So, I mean, you know, he I thought he put in an excellent shift, and for me, was my man of the match. Paul.
Seconded. Yeah, same for me. You know, you could make a case for CCV, but really, you know, Matt O'Riley has been coming on to a game. Like, there's been a narrative that his head's been turned. He hasn't kicked a ball since the winter break. It's just nonsense. He's had a form dip. Of course he has. He's played, you know, nearly 90 minutes every week, especially when we've had those injuries. He's been carrying that team, and fatigue's definitely played a part. But you can just see over the last few weeks that he's gradually been coming on to a game, which is perfect timing for the running. And yeah, I thought he was outstanding yesterday, particularly first half. But yeah, until he went off, he was our top man. And yeah, like you say, fantastic penalty. So we are agreed, Matt O'Riley, man of the match.
Very good. So I've just round up some comments and then we'll get some music reviews from you, Paul. Who's the snitch? Anthony, have you a double in the States? Check out Salty Cracker. He's great. Okay, I'll need to check that out. I'll get back to you on that one. James Floyd, hail, hail, troops. Hail, hail to you, James. And then there was one here I thought kind of summed it up for me. I think that sort of says itself. Yeah, and then this other one did make me laugh as well. Johnny Hayes would have took that one on the puss. Yep, he would have done. Hard as nails, old Johnny. And I remember him breaking up the park and scoring a late sealer at Ibrox, and that really upset the I know it was a game that your man got the red card. He was on the park 5 minutes. I don't know, he kicked the ball for Rangers again after that. Young lad, I can't remember Barry. He just totally lost the plot. I'm pretty sure that was the same game. Paul, music recommendations. What have you got for us?
So, I've not listened to the whole of this album, but I've listened to a couple of tracks off it. And they were there enough for me to recommend giving it a listen. One of my favorite bands, been around for ever, but had a big sabbatical. Glasgow's own Jesus and Mary Chain, back with another album called Glasgow Eyes. Silver Strings was the track I heard, and then I had a duck in. But yeah, this has only been out about 2 weeks. It just popped up on my radar. So yeah, look, it's probably not a patch on the old classic stuff, but nice to see these guys back and making new music with the legacy they've got. So yeah, the Jesus and Mary Chain, Glasgow Eyes is my album recommendation of the week.
I'm on a bit of a nostalgia trip at the moment because Disney has started an extension of the original X-Men animated series cartoon that I watched as a kid growing up. So 30 years later, they brought back the original cast, the original theme song, and they've released another 10 episodes. So we're about episode 4 at the moment, and it's just such a nostalgia trip. If you sort of watched the original, like, it's actually really well done. It's one of these sort of animation things that adults and children can sort of watch it together. So if you've got kids, I don't, but you could definitely watch it with them and sort of relive your Saturday morning cartoon days. So definitely worth checking out if that is your bag. We've got 145 people live at the moment. Thank you very much for joining us. It's been great having you in the comments. It's been really just the last couple of weeks.
Does Monty not like X-Men the cartoon?
Well, didn't hear him. I couldn't hear him. There. He was outside before, so he's just having his say. He's been pretty quiet tonight. that's him going now. This must be time to wrap up. So again, guys, if you can like the episode on YouTube, that just helps like-minded selts like us get out there and get more likes and views and everyone's seeing us. If you're not following us on the socials, they're all down below. Paul and I are on Twitter or X, whatever it's called. Paul's a little bit more active than me, but feel free to give us a follow. We will probably follow you back. Paul, ain't all that's left to say, mate, is hail, hail.
Hail, hail.
Podcast Network.